Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil, gol. Mustafi, gol del Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. James, a very, 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 very goodly morning to you.
A very goodly morning to you, and a very goodly morning to all the listeners out there as well.
Absolutely. We should include them in the goodliness, because it does feel like a particularly goodly morning. You know what, though? I've got a really itchy finger. The outside of my right index finger is really itchy. So if people hear scratching noises during the podcast, that's what it is.
That's interesting. And I say this because last night, the inside of my itchy finger, the inside of my index finger was itching.
Right. Maybe we should just rename them the index finger to itchy finger. That could be the new name for
maybe.
It. I don't know.
Somehow our fingers are reaching out to each other.
Yeah, it's something cosmic going on here.
It's a small price to pay.
It is indeed. It is indeed. I take it you enjoyed the weekend.
Very much so. Mm. Very much so. And in fact, the positioning of that game, a lunchtime kickoff, I was worried about it, because if it goes the wrong way, obviously, that's the whole weekend gone. You know, at least if it's the Sunday afternoon, you could have a nice Saturday. But with it going as well as it did, I had a smile on my face, you know, well, until this very moment.
All right. And then what's changed now? Are you still smiling or?
No, the finger stuff, really. I'm now worried about what's wrong with us. I'm Googling frantically itchy finger symptoms, wondering what's happening.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's the start of some kind of plague that will end the world. Yeah. But look, at least we go out on
at
a
least
high.
We're documenting it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. We leave a digital archive for people. What was it that caused the end of humanity? Yeah, it was these two guys talking about Arsenal. They had itchy fingers, and then somehow it spread. Maybe it is. Mm. I guess everyone is sitting there. If you talk about things itching, all of a sudden, you know, things start to itch as well, don't they? So people listening to this now will be going, I've got an itch now somewhere as well, head or face or what have you. So this is going to be a very scratchy podcast. But look, as you say, it's a small price to pay for what was a really, really enjoyable weekend, a really enjoyable Arsenal performance, a really enjoyable Arsenal win, some very, very enjoyable Tottenham griping about the result. I enjoy that too. You know, there is that thing, you know, you obviously enjoy it from an Arsenal point of view, but it is made better when other people are unhappy and very publicly unhappy, like Maurizio Pochettino was after the game. He couldn't hide his unhappiness at some of the refereeing decisions. And that just made me laugh. That made me enjoy it all the more.
Yeah, I think as well, given the kind of climate that had existed around Spurs heading into the game, the amount of praise that had been put upon them, and Pochettino in particular, I think to see him looking as grumpy as he was by the end of the game was enjoyable. Mm. And ultimately, like, you know, I don't think anyone could dispute that we were the better team on the day and that we deserved to get the result. But the fact that there was stuff in it that really irritated them in terms of the officiating, I quite enjoyed that, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly in the wake of what happened to us at Manchester City, what happened to us at Stoke as well. You know, I saw Mustafi talking about it after the game, and he was very much, well, look, you know, sometimes it goes for you, sometimes it goes against you. But yeah, I think you're right. In the whole context of the game and the build-up to the game, you know, I read somewhere, I don't know where it was, James, I read somewhere that, like, if you were to make a combined 11, that it would be all Spurs players. I don't know where I saw that, but you know, I just think that kind of atmosphere or analysis of the two teams, you know, to an extent you can understand it. You know, Arsenal fans, we were going into this game, we were a bit nervous. You know, we haven't been convincing on a consistent basis this season, and Tottenham, I guess, have been, you know, pretty good by their standards. I do wonder if there is an element of that, you know, that people talk them up and talk them up as great because they're doing so much better than they normally do. You know, we've had 20-odd years of Tottenham being, well, not 20-odd years, clearly we've had a lifetime of Tottenham being, you know, bang average. Do you think there is an element of that, that now that they're just a little bit better than they were, people are overstating how good they are?
Sorry, I was just enjoying some delicious tea.
Oh,
there.
Hang on, sorry, yeah, hang on. That's some good tea. Oh, if only people could see me now. I'm winking. I'm doing a little wink at the microphone.
Careful,
here.
Andrew. Careful. You're being very highly provocative.
Oh my goodness!
That
yeah.
winking over a tea. Be careful. You could start a war if you're not careful. Listen, I think you're right. I think that the fact that the dynamic has shifted considerably, and it has, you know, if you look at the past 20 years, the present moment is kind of the outlier in that respect. And I suppose that's a talking point, and it leads to, you know, people praising Spurs for kind of closing that gap, as it were, or making up that ground. However, you know, if you look at the tangibles, be that trophies, for example, there is still a significant distance between the two clubs. I mean, I don't think anyone's pretending that Spurs haven't got a decent team at the moment.
No.
And that's probably why we're enjoying the Derby results so much. They have got a decent team. In some ways, it's been, for the majority of this season, a better team than ours in terms of the way it's performed. Mm. But it was lovely to see that when it came to the crunch, when it came to this big game, I looked at that Spurs team, and for all the talk about all those players, your Harry Kanes, your Dele Allies, you know, your Christian Eriksons, I mean, they really weren't in the game. They didn't seem, I mean, it's something you've heard said about Arsenal teams in the past, but they didn't seem to have a huge amount of character. They didn't seem to deal with the occasion particularly well. And it was great to be on the other side of that.
Yeah, it really was. I really enjoyed the picture of the pictures when Harry Kane and Dele Alli were being hauled off, just completely bedraggled, wet, had barely had a kick all game, did the square root of fuck all between them. These are the great hopes, you know, that had been, they were removed from international duty because they were injured, just to keep them fresh for this game, and then to see them, you know, I won't say that they played badly. I say that we made them look bad because of the way we played and the way we defended.
I thought our defence were excellent, but that moment where they went off, you know, it was the lily white flag, wasn't it, waving, and the Arsenal fans knew it. And it was curious. I mean, you know, given that they'd had that bit of rest and that they are so comfortably their most dangerous players, particularly Kane. I have to say, when they replaced them with Llorente and Son, I was absolutely delighted.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And I think just sort of on that, before we go into the Arsenal side of things, there's, you know, just in terms of the media coverage and the way it's been presented, Luke Lampard, who's at Luke Lampard 1, sent us a tweet. The Telegraph have got a podcast at the Total Football podcast by the Telegraph. It says, listen to the latest episode of the Telegraph Total Football podcast. Beating Spurs is Arsenal's cup final. And Luke says, well, why do so many people tend to forget about the actual cup finals we've been routinely winning for the last number of years? You know, the actual trophies. I thought it was very interesting, Pochettino saying, we don't care about the FA Cup, we don't care about cups, we want to win the big things. It's like, hang on a minute. Who the fuck do you think you are to turn down? We don't want that trophy. Get out of here. Come on, you haven't won fuck all in ages. And you're going to turn down, you know, an actual trophy. Of course, everyone wants to win the big ones. You want to win the league. You want to win the Champions League. Of course you do. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers. And they are fucking beggity beggars of the highest order.
I completely agree.
I have a little. Maybe I don't have it here. No, I'll find it a bit later. Someone sent me a very nice audio clip, which you probably won't be able to hear, but I'll play it a bit later on in the show. People will know it when they hear it. So look, let's get into it. Any surprises or anything with regards to the team selection? It was always going to be a straight choice between Mertesacker and Mustafi. He went with Mustafi. I think that was a decision that was very much vindicated by what I think was his best performance in an Arsenal shirt. I thought, you know, the back three, I wrote about it in the blog, I thought the back three were outstanding and provided us the platform to go and play the way that we did. And when you look at all the clearances they made, all the blocks they made, you know, they just defended so well. I thought it was quite noticeable as well. As soon as Spurs got near our penalty area, there were men on those men. As soon as Kane got near the ball or Dele Alli, they had men up their arses. You know, the back three were absolutely brilliant. But Mustafi in particular stood out for me. I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah, it was his best performance in an Arsenal shirt, I think. I mean, obviously the goal goes some way towards that, but defensively, I can't think of a time that he looked so solid, so secure. You know, memories of him unnecessarily diving in kind of briefly evaporated. He bullied Kane out of the game. He sort of... It was a little bit like the way he dealt with Morata at Stamford Bridge, but I think he did it much better on this occasion. Yeah. I think he was much more measured in the way he went about it. But it was the same essential idea of trying to get to every ball first, trying to play, you know, ahead of his man as much as possible. Just really, I mean, he was very physical. He was very, very, very physical on the day. And he's so quick that he can be at times very aggressive. But with Koscielny and Monreal mopping up on either side, it was a very, very effective unit. And... yeah, I think there were probably a few Arsenal fans out there wondering about bringing Mustafi straight back in, because, you know, Mertesacker hadn't done too badly. You know, he's the club captain, he knows what this derby means, but it was a big decision and one that was hugely, hugely vindicated. And what a fantastic header as well. I know we'll come on to the goals, I'm sure, but a brilliant, brilliant header. One to rival Sanya, really, for me, in the way it looped into that far top corner.
Yeah, there's something just wonderful about seeing a header like that, because he needed to get the power, the accuracy. It was a great jump. I mean, let's talk about the goal. Good delivery from Ozil. I thought it was interesting where he spoke after the game. He said Ozil was on the other side of the pitch. Normally, you would expect a free kick from that position to be taken by a right-footed player. That's what we've been doing, you know, in that it will be an in-swinging free kick. Normally Sanchez would take it, but Ozil took this one. Great delivery. Offside, don't care. Not interested in even discussing the possibility of offside. I don't care. Like, I can't. I just don't care. I care that it made Spurs unhappy, but I don't care about it from an Arsenal point of view. And yeah, I mean, what a header! I mean, really, really brilliant. I mean, he was under pressure. He was being buffeted around in the area, and he was strongest. And yeah, lovely going in off the post. Keeper stranded. Can't ask for more.
No, you really, really can't. I mean, it's interesting because you say, yeah, a right footer would have taken it from that position normally. And even if it's a left footer, in recent weeks, you know, Granit Xhaka's been on a lot of those deliveries. But Ozil, you know, apparently Mustafi said something to him as he went to take
it. Yeah, go take it. Go take it.
Yeah, go take it, basically. It's deep tactics. And then Ozil, after the game, actually praised Mustafi, didn't he? And said, we look a much more solid team with Mustafi in it. I mean, those guys obviously have got a good relationship off the field, but it was nice to see it bear fruit on the field. I'm guessing if you don't care about the offside, you don't really care about the free kick decision either.
Absolutely not. No. I mean, look, sometimes it was a little bit soft. It was a little bit soft. I would be unhappy if it went against us, and you know, I would rail against the decision. But given that it went for us, I mean, this is the inherent hypocrisy of football fans. You know, we want the right decisions to be made by referees when the decisions that we deem wrong go against us. But if a wrong decision goes in our favor, we're able to just sort of compartmentalize that and say, meh, you know, so what, and that, yeah. It was a six of one, half a dozen of the other kind of coming together. I think there was a little bit of a shirt pull, but it was relatively soft, but fuck that. Fuck it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's still a great ball, great header. I think that's what we'll choose to enjoy, and the indignation of the Spurs fans, of course.
James, some breaking news.
Go on.
Tony Pulis has been sacked as manager of West Brom.
What a day it is.
I think I'm going to have some more tea.
I believe that's known as the icing on the cake.
Lovely. Well, goodbye, Tony Pulis. Let's hope we never, ever, ever see you again.
Are you happier to see him gone, or would you rather he'd stayed in charge and potentially been relegated?
I don't know. I guess he's going to go and like manage Wales or something now, isn't he? Given that Chris Coleman has gone to manage Sunderland.
it's the strangest thing I've ever seen. I can't understand it.
Yeah, why would anyone go and manage Sunderland? That seems like one of the worst jobs in the world.
It is.
Yeah, but anyway, we move on, and not long after the first goal, we got the second. Again, a hint of offside that I couldn't care less about, and. Mm-hmm. A run from Lacazette, which was found by Hector Bellerin, a good pass from Hector Bellerin. But Lacazette's movement during the game was very interesting, and you could see at times how it was causing the Tottenham defence some problems. He got in well behind, delivered a good ball, and Sanchez maybe a little bit lucky in terms of his touches, the way it fell for him. But I have to admire Hugo Lloris. This thing that he did, just falling over backwards for no reason whatsoever, made it very, very easy for Sanchez to score the goal.
Yeah, it was kind of from the David Ospina stand behind the line school of goalkeeping. You know, the old rules of sort of make yourself big. Lloris kind of made himself as small as possible. It was very generous of him. I actually haven't watched the replay of that one too many times, so I haven't necessarily perceived it as luck. The way I saw it, Sanchez kind of did pretty well to kind of keep the ball under control.
Well, maybe I'm being harsh here, because it just struck me that his first touch was a little bit heavy. Hang on. I'm going to look at it here. Ooh, there's here it is. Here's the goal. Boom, boom, boom. I'm just fast forwarding to get to the goal. 1 second.
You might well be right, but I don't know.
Okay. That's the first one they're showing again there. Hang on.
Oh, you don't mind watching that. That's fine.
No, I don't mind watching that at all. Okay. Oh, there's Mike Dean. Yeah, I can see Mike Dean.
Good old Mike Dean.
Good old Mike Dean. One of our favourites, it has to be said. I don't think anybody's ever... nobody's ever said a bad word about Mike Dean, I don't think. You know, did his job very well. Okay, here it is. Boom. It sort of bounced off him a little bit. It bounced off his side or his... foot. Let me have a look at the replay here. He's currently on his knees, sliding. Aaron Ramsey, first over, his best friend there to congratulate him.
Best buddies.
I mean, they do bicker on the pitch, but you know, you can see that they, you know, when those goals go in, there's Pochettino looking sad now. Sad Poch. Yeah, they always seem to get together for celebrations and stuff like that, so I don't think there's any real issue. Okay, here we go again. The replay. Bellerin picks it up. Plays it to a not at all offside Lacazette. Cracks it in. Yeah, okay, yeah. He takes it on the inside of his left leg, I think. So, yeah, I could be very harsh with that. It could be just a really good piece of control of a ball that was moving very, very fast. So I give all the credit now to Alexis Sanchez.
If he'd signed a new contract, you'd be saying what a good touch it was. I thought as well, it's a really good pass from Hector Bellerin. You know, say what you want about the offside line, it's incredibly tight, whatever way it goes. Mm. And it's a nice pass from Bellerin, who I thought had a really good game. He looked like a midfield player in this game. He looked really astute. His passing was excellent. It's a point Tim Steelman makes about him sometimes, you know, that he was kind of raised as a midfielder in La Masia with Barcelona. Mm. And I think you could see that in his game against Spurs. He was very intelligent on the ball. Lacazette's movement is so good, you know. That's why there's debate over that offside decision, because he runs the line so well.
Yeah.
And I thought he had an excellent game, actually. I thought he probably deserved a goal, to be honest, for his efforts. But I'm sure there'll be plenty more in the pipeline.
Yeah. So, you know, 2-0, we could have scored more in the second half. I think Lloris made a couple of good saves. And for the most part, Tottenham were kept at bay. There was a really great Petr Cech save from an Eric Dier header. That was a fantastic piece of goalkeeping there, and that was important, because you know, if they get one back and you've got 20 minutes, we're beginning to tire a little bit. It was a big moment, and that's what you need your goalkeeper to do in games like this.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, we could have got nervy even at 2-0 at half time. We looked very, very comfortable, but you felt, oh, if we concede one goal, you know, we might surrender the initiative a bit here. So it was a big save and a big moment. But yeah, in the second half, I never really felt worried. I don't know about you. I mean, for a North London derby, I was relatively serene.
Yeah, I think so. I was beginning to get a little bit worried that we might start getting tired and some space would open up in midfield, and he brought Francis Coquelin on for for Alexandre Lacazette. And I think, you know,
it was not a popular decision.
We've got a question about that, so we might come to that a bit later on. But just in general terms, I could understand why he needed to shore up the midfield. I understood the substitution, you know, but when you take Lacazette off and put Coquelin on, you know, you can understand people's reaction to that as well. But I think in general, it was a sensible move. You're 2-0 up in a derby, and what you don't want is to all of a sudden start getting overrun in midfield and for them to build up any momentum. And I think, you know, it was a sensible substitution. I mean, what was interesting to me was when you look at it statistically, they had more of the ball, 58% possession to 42%. And Arsenal's players, the passing accuracy percentages for Arsenal's players were really, really low, some of them. You know, Koscielny 70%, Mustafi 70%, Monreal 86%, Bellerin 65%, Kolasinac 57%, Xhaka 76%, Ramsey 73%, Sanchez 69%, Ozil 81%, Lacazette 76%. So it wasn't like when we had the ball, we were really brilliant with it or comfortable with it. Kolasinac down to 57% is really quite strange. But I think what it comes down to is Arsene Wenger talking about before the game. You know, he was asked about being tough and all that kind of stuff. And no, he said, it's not about being tough. It's about being efficient. And I think we were efficient with the chances that we had.
We were. And those passing numbers, I'd be interested to know, like, does a clearance factor into those passes? Do you know what I mean? Mm. So let's say you clear the ball away, but it goes to the opposition rather than a teammate.
Yeah.
Is that a missed pass? Because I think that we made a lot of clearances in the game, you know, that back three in particular. And I think Kolasinac too, you know, he might have been more quiet going forward, but I actually thought he did a very disciplined role on the left-hand side, almost as a kind of auxiliary left-back. We've seen him plenty of times playing as a kind of winger, but this was him operating as a defender, and I thought he did that pretty well on the day. But yeah, those are surprisingly low numbers, but I thought that we had a really nice balance of aggression. Because I did think that we had that, and I don't just mean in terms of like challenges, I mean in terms of the way we started the game and put Spurs on the back foot. The way we pressed from the front, which I thought was really maybe the hallmark of this performance. I mean, seeing us press in a way that felt genuinely quite cohesive and almost planned.
Yeah.
Not just Alexis haring around on his own.
Yeah, gesturing madly for people to come and join him.
Yeah, you never saw that really. Mm. You know, it felt considered and it felt intelligent. It felt designed. And then I think when we did get chances to attack, I thought the front three linked in a way that was really very, very impressive, especially given their limited playing time together. I mean, it's an old adage in football, isn't it? Good players can play with good players. But
yeah.
I think every time we see that trio together, that maxim is kind of proven true, and so it proved against Spurs. I thought that, you know, there were moments, even though we only scored a couple of goals and even though there weren't necessarily a huge amount of clear-cut chance in the game, where the understanding of that trio really kind of bubbled. And I think we've just got to keep playing them, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. There were some really nice counter-attacking moments as well. I think there was one where Ozil won the ball on the edge of our box and we broke upfield. Ramsey, I think, was involved and Sanchez almost played Ozil through. But yeah, look, the more that they play together, the better the understanding they're going to have. And, you know, certainly Lacazette's movement is something the team are still trying to get used to. You know, they're not necessarily looking for him at some of the moments when they should be. But when you've got Sanchez and Ozil there, who can find those passes, who can provide the creative spark that you need when you've got a player like Lacazette up front, it's very promising. But like you say, we've got to keep playing them. We have to keep playing them in the Premier League games. So it augurs well, I think, you know, to be able to pull that kind of a performance out, you know, when it was needed, tells you that there is more to this team and there is more about this team than maybe people think. The issue, of course, is the consistency. And, you know, I think it's probably worth discussing, you know, it wasn't something I wanted to go into in the blog yesterday or today, but, you know, it is worth discussing, you know, the why don't we see that every week point of view. with regards this team and the commitment and the organisation and the discipline and everything else. I know that not all football games are the same. You know, it's ridiculous to expect every single football game to work out the way you want it to work out, regardless of how hard you work or how much you want it and all those kind of things. There are intangibles and variables that will sometimes go against you. But, you know, there is, and we've talked about it before, a kind of a performance that we see from Arsenal at some point in the season where we go, whoa, that's it. That's it, guys. Just do that. Do that again and do it next week and do it next week and do it next week and do it next week. I mean, you think back to the 3-0 win over Chelsea last season. You know, the Emirates, another really big performance against a big team. You know, you could feel the crowd energized by it, the same way you could feel the crowd energized by the performance on Saturday. And, you know, it worked both ways as well. You know, you could feel that the crowd were really up for this game as well. And people will ask, well, why can't the atmosphere be like that all the time? Well, it's because you're not playing Tottenham all the time. I think we need to learn to hate the other 18 teams in the league as well, or however many. Yeah. You know, there are some we already hate and some you're going to be up for, but maybe that's what we need to do. Start really focusing on the hatred of everyone else just to get that atmosphere up there, you know. But where do you stand on that in terms of, okay, this was a great performance, a great win. They now need to replicate that more often.
Well, I obviously stand in concurrence with that, but as you say, we've been here before. Chelsea is kind of the template from last season, isn't it? The kind of milestone performance that we thought, that's what we need to go out there and emulate. I mean, I guess what Arsene Wenger might say is, when you look at the team he put out against Spurs, that's his best 11 players. That's his best team, right? Mm. And I don't think that side has played together at any other point this season. I don't think Mustafi's been fit at the same time that we fielded, say, Ozil, Alexis and Lacazette. Mm. So I think that is the first time we've seen our best team. In terms of a kind of bigger psychological picture, I don't know. It is so tricky, isn't it? Because sometimes with Arsenal you feel like they need a big game like this to get themselves up for it. Other times you feel like big games and pressure is what can lead them to crumble.
Yeah,
I don't think it's particularly consistent in terms of the context that produces these performances. All you can hope, really, is what the one thing that is kind of evident in football is, I think, the idea of form and the idea of momentum, and that when a team is playing with confidence, they're invariably turning better performances.
Mm.
And I think that this is a performance from which you can really derive some confidence. You know, I think if you look at this season more broadly, we went into it off the back of the FA Cup final. We were all feeling pretty good about ourselves. And I think the events before the transfer deadline, on and off the pitch, really destabilised things. Far more possibly than anyone had anticipated they would. And this is a result and a day and an occasion, I think, that enables us to kind of not wipe the slate clean, because we can't do that in terms of points, but at least say, well, from here we can build.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's all you can do, really. I mean, I do think there are tactical things, like the way that we pressed, like the way that we seemed a bit more efficient on the counter-attack, that need to be taken into other games. Precisely how that's done is kind of down to the manager. But there were those little things where it felt like there had been a little bit of tinkering under the bonnet, or a little bit of added focus.
Yeah.
And you do kind of think, if that was applied on a weekly basis, surely we would be in a better position.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right about the confidence. Certainly, you know, when you haven't won away from home all season, it's going to be, it's got to be a thing, right? It's got to be a thing that's, collectively, it's in the back of their minds. You know, when you look ahead to next weekend, and we got to go to Burnley, which is a difficult place to go to, you know, off the back of a trip to Cologne. But we haven't done it in the Premier League away. So you want to go into that game with a bit more confidence and belief. And I think, you know, a performance like that against Spurs, you know, the players will have been aware as well of what was being said about Tottenham and what was being said about Arsenal. I think Mustafi referenced it a bit, didn't he, in his post-game stuff. You know, we're not dead. I think he said something along those lines, you know, that, it, you know, from a fan's point of view, it's easier, I think, to not focus on the negative, but to predict the worst outcome, you know, because you're almost steeling yourself for a disappointment when you go into a game like this. And, you know, we've answered some questions against Tottenham, but there are still some questions to answer. But yeah, I mean, it will be a confidence boost to the team. It should be a confidence boost to the fans as well. But what they have to do, they've got to keep it going, and hopefully they can build on this. I know we've been down this road before. I know that we've said it before, but what else can we do other than hope that that's the case? There's nothing else we can do, right? You know, and you don't want to, I certainly don't want to talk today about, oh, well, you know, this is a one-off, it's not going to happen again. I don't want to do that because it takes away the enjoyment. And I think what we've got to do as well is remember that when you do win a game like this, you should enjoy it as much as you possibly can without caveats, without the what-ifs and the what-abouteries and all that kind of stuff. Because it's important. It's part of being a football fan, is enjoying these moments and enjoying the fallout and enjoying all the other bits and pieces that go on when you win a big game against your local rivals. You win the North London Derby. That is a game that you should take a warm glow from for the whole week. You know, whether you're having the bragging rights at work or with, you know, friends or whoever are Tottenham fans, you've got to enjoy it.
Absolutely, and you should relish it. And also, in the interest of being positive, you know, we can talk about our away form, but I think we do have to have a word for our home form too, which has been really excellent. And it kind of crept up on me that I didn't realise quite how consistent we've managed to be at the Emirates Stadium recently. But what is it now? We're unbeaten there for quite a long time.
Yeah, I think you've got to go back to January. In the Premier League when we lost 2-1 to Watford. That's the last time we lost a game at home in the Premier League. So it's, I mean, people talk about the Emirates and they have issues with the stadium, and you can understand that. And while it's not necessarily, you know, your archetypal fortress, the home record is very good, and the players obviously feel that as well. They feel confident at home. And given we've got Manchester United to come later this month, you know, you would hope that, you know, that's going to be a positive for us going into that game, which is, again, going to be another big game, another sort of benchmark game.
Yeah, I mean, it's there are some big games coming up, but as
December 2nd, sorry.
That's it, yeah, just the other side of the month. But there's a lot of big games coming up, but I feel much better about them with this Spurs result behind us. And it's just lovely, isn't it, to just put them back in their box a little bit.
Yeah, get back in there, you fucking uppity cunts. you know, seriously, it is. I mean, it happens all the time. All the time we get this talk of power shifts and how the balance has changed and all those kind of things. And you know, like you say, you can acknowledge the fact that they've got a good team, and they've got a better team than, you know, most of us have experienced in our lifetimes. certainly those of us who weren't alive in 1961 when they might have had a good team, which is, of course, the last time that they won the league, 1961. You know, they haven't won anything for years. And success in football ultimately is measured by what you can put in your trophy cabinet, right? You know, people slag us off all the time for, like, the fourth place trophy and blah, 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 finishing in the top four. What have they got?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much nonsense around it, and it is kind of refreshing to be able to kind of put the nail in the coffin of a few ideas surrounding Spurs. I mean, I still think if you're a top player and you're looking at the Premier League and you're asked to choose between Arsenal and Spurs, I still think you choose Arsenal, because I still think the prospects are bigger there. I think that, you know, we take so much stick as a club for not winning things, for not winning away enough to the top four, and yet those are both problems that Tottenham have. And I also think that fundamentally, yes, they finished above us last season, but one season, even if it is the most recent in memory, cannot single-handedly outweigh the weight of two decades. And it's very easy as fans to sort of write off our Premier League campaign and go, you know, we're not going to win it this year, so what are we interested in? And the answer, rationally, is, look, we need to get in the top four, we need to get in the Champions League. But I could understand fans feeling a bit apathetic about that. But make the motivation to finish ahead of Spurs, because, you know, that would be enjoyable, and that's the right That's the right thing to do, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It is the right thing to do. And then what, you know, what could the impact of that be, for example, where you have, you know, if Arsenal finish top four and let's say Spurs finish outside the top four, what happens then to the momentum, to the building, to players like Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, who maybe will have ambitions of doing more in their career than celebrating the fact that they finished above Arsenal once? You know, Tottenham's financial issues, can they hold on to those players if someone comes in with big money bids for their top players? You know, if those players get their heads turned by significantly increased wage packets, as has been known to happen from time to time with footballers, you know, then it becomes a bit more difficult for them. So I hope, you know, whatever happens this season, we can really put a halt to whatever kind of momentum they think they're building, and they can go back to being the, you know, the sort of mid-table team we all know and enjoy.
Exactly. Let's make last season an anomaly, if we can.
Yes. All right. Well, look, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArsblog. Just want to say a very quick thank you to David Hafner, who provided me with the audio that you heard there between the two parts of the show. I think that's a good song. I like that song. Could be a Christmas number one, actually.
Can you imagine? Let's get that to Christmas number one.
that could be our Christmas song this year.
Yeah, I would really enjoy that if that was Christmas number one. Right, should we get into the questions?
Yeah, let's get into the questions.
Okay, let's have this one. It's from Alistair Wood, who's at Alleyboy82 on Twitter. He says, "Gentlemen, as classy, refined pillars of society..." He's not wrong there.
No, he's not, no.
What is your preferred choice of tea to celebrate a vintage win over the local vagabonds?
You know what? When it comes to tea, I'm not much of a snob. I'm not fussy at all when it comes to tea. Like, I know there's all these kind of different infusion teas and all that kind of stuff now, flavored teas, you know, mango and pineapple tea and blueberry and elderflower and all that kind of stuff. I don't want I've got nothing to do with any of those. I can't.
Right. You're just having normal
normal cup of tea, tea bag in, two sugars, nice and strong, tiny drop of milk. That's me. I'm an unfussy.
Oh, that sounds good.
I'm an unfussy tea drinker. What about you?
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm down to one sugar, which I'm regarding as progress.
Yeah.
But in my house there's sort of echinacea teas and I don't know.
What like the hell said, is that?
I don't even know. Nettle tea? Oh, why bollocks. Do I want to drink a nettle?
I know people drink green tea because it's got antioxidants or some shit, but like if I wanted to drink something that tasted like water that had been brewed through a sock, there's a real cheap way of doing that, you know?
Yeah, I'm the same as you. Builder's tea, really, for me.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We should probably, I mean, if you are unaware why we've started the second half with a question about tea, there was, well... To put it rather aptly, a storm in a teacup, wasn't there, over the weekend?
Quite literally, yes. Literally. I think someone pointed that out on our Twitter mentions. I should give him a mention. Yeah, Ollie Tucker, at Ollie Tucker 93, says, has the saying storm in a teacup ever been more literal?
I don't think so. No, the gift that keeps on giving.
Mm. Very good.
So basically, if you're not on the social media or what have you, a Daily Mail journalist did a pre-match combined 11, which consisted entirely of Tottenham players, as far as I understand it. I must admit, I haven't clicked on the article or really given it the time of day until this subsequent storm.
Yeah, I'm not clicking on the Daily Mail website. Fuck those guys.
Yeah, but I think the Arsenal social media team from the Arsenal Twitter account after the game, and obviously the result in Arsenal's favour, responded to this tweet with a winky emoji and a gif of Mesut Ozil drinking a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And unknowingly unleashed some sort of hell, I believe, on this journalist in that he reported that over the following 12 hours or whatever it was, he was subjected to online abuse, including some very serious allegations of homophobic abuse and anti-Semitic abuse, which is obviously completely unacceptable. But the subsequent... blame has been laid quite squarely at the feet of Arsenal.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, what did you make of the whole thing?
Well, I thought it was good-natured. I thought it was funny. I think, the reply was, it was just fun, right? Arsenal are not responsible for the replies that were levelled at this guy. And like you, I don't have any time for or do not condone in any way that kind of abuse. I just don't do it. I've seen some of the comments that were made, and they're just completely unacceptable. Where I think the issue is, personally, is the is blaming Arsenal. I see quite a number of journalists got quite outraged. They really got in a lather about this. There was all kinds of arguments and what have you going on. And I do see the point where you say, well, look, if you have 12 million followers and you engage in some online banter, then you're basically unleashing a pylon. I can see why some people would think that. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think if you've got X amount of followers, you know, why should that change the way that you engage with anyone? And you're not inviting people to have a go at this. The issue for me is people being abusive and the fact that they're allowed to be abusive on Twitter. Like, I saw, someone called him a fucking Jew or something like that. And I think there was another one, like the guy called him a gay cunt. And you're going, well, hang on a minute. If someone left those comments on Arsblog or tried to leave those comments on Arsblog, number one, they'd be deleted. Number two, those people would be banned from using the website. They would not be allowed to comment on the website. And I think the bigger issue here is the fact that Twitter allows people to use their platform without any kind of reprimand when they are abusive, when they're homophobic, when they're anti-Semitic, when they're racist, when they're sexist, when they're misogynistic. It just seems to be accepted as part and parcel of, well, that's just the way people talk online. It shouldn't be accepted. Mm. That if you say something like that, your account should be suspended. Tough shit. And that, to me, is the bigger issue.
I think so. I think it is Twitter's responsibility. Gary Neville said clubs should absolutely continue to do this type of thing. We shouldn't let the minority have overstepped the mark on here, cloud what is good humour and interaction. And I am inclined to agree with that. I actually think it's nice. It was very funny, I thought, what the Arsenal team did. It was so not aggressive. You know what I mean? It was so light-hearted and gentle, really, in the scheme of things. And of course, it's awful that some people jumped on that bandwagon in the manner that they did. But, you know, those people need to be banned from a social media website like that.
Yeah, and I think we need to, put to one side whatever partisan feelings you have about Arsenal or Arsenal fans. You know, I've seen people say, well, no, there's no abuse. I didn't see any abuse at all. You know, you can't condone or excuse that kind of behavior just because it's from Arsenal fans. It's not a conspiracy. The guy clearly did receive some very unsavory, unacceptable abuse that nobody should be subjected to. But, you know, let's not pretend that it doesn't happen or pretend that just because it's Arsenal fans, it can't happen, that we're somehow better than that. There are elements of our support who are not nice and who engage in behavior that should not be tolerated. And it requires all of us, if we're going to be good and decent people about that, it requires us to address that and accept it. Not accept it, but to accept that it happens and to not tolerate it. To call people out when they use, racist or sexist language or anti-Semitic language, and you still see it, you know, with regards to Tottenham and, you know, the word Yid that's thrown around all the time, and it shouldn't be, you know. But it's up to us as well to try and address that or draw attention to it. You know, it shouldn't be acceptable in any way. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think the outrage from certain sections of the media and certain journalists was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. I understand sticking up for a member of your profession. It's not nice to see somebody get that kind of abuse, but don't, you know, address the real issue. Don't point the finger at Arsenal when it wasn't Arsenal that did it.
No, and at the end of the day, in no way would you attempt to justify that abuse. But of course, an article like that is going to provoke a big response, right? Because effectively, it's a bit of a wind-up, putting it out.
Yeah. I think the article was a number of Daily Mail journalists picking their combined 11s. I think the other thing we should say, James, of course, is that the idea of a combined 11 is absolutely risable, right? It's like...
I had to do one for work and it was the most painful thing. Well, the worst thing about it was I had to do one for work and it was based on form this season, but then they tweeted it out to however many bloody million followers they've got or 100,000 followers they've got without saying that. So it just looked like I'd included the most bizarre players. And I got some abuse, let me tell you, but you didn't hear me go crying about it.
No, but I mean, I think the other thing as well is that you do have to be aware that when you write or when you're putting stuff in the public domain, whether it's a combined 11 or whether it's an opinion piece, that, you know, it's out there. You're writing for a website that thrives on clickbait and thrives on some pretty unfortunate stuff. You know, I don't say that to excuse anything or to suggest that just because someone writes for the Daily Mail, they deserve to be abused. You can, we've all got an off button. We don't have to click on anything we don't like. But, I think it's worth being mindful about how you express yourself or the way that you provide your opinion or point of view. How you write things, people can react in a certain way. So if you write something that's critical, but you're just completely off the wall and you're going crazy and angry, you're going to get those kind of responses back. Whereas if you're just slightly mindful in your criticism, or if you try and explain why you're being critical, then you're more likely to get an open kind of dialogue. And I think it's worth people remembering or trying to remember, you know, what the online world is like. you know, I'm not making any excuses for it, but, you know, you don't, like I said in the blog today, you don't fucking go crying when you've been throwing rocks at a wasp's nest and they come out and fucking sting you. So there is that element to it as well. So
anyway, should we move on from the whole affair?
We shall indeed. We shall indeed. Okay, this is a question from Bjorn Alm, who's at AlmN5. And he is talking about the Borussia Dortmund scout Sven Mislintat. Is that how you say it?
Is that what we're going with? I don't know. Yeah, Mislintat, I think.
Mislintat. He says, it seems to be done. What do you think he can bring in regards of new signings? Feels like we've been left behind and late to the party when it comes to exciting talent abroad for a while now.
Yeah. Well, from what I'm hearing, I mean, aside from what's in the press, this is going to happen, which is really exciting. As a fan base, we get excited about bringing players in, but I think we've been so starved of these kind of off-field recruitments that when, you know, Jens Lehmann's appointed as a coach or we get a new contract specialist, you know, we get quite into it as a fan base. But this guy, you can understand some of the hype because, you know, there was an image doing the rounds the other day, I think, on Twitter of kind of a combined 11 of the sorts of players he's recruited to Dortmund down the years. And that was worth having a look at. You know, people like Aubameyang, Lewandowski, you know, Dembele, Kagawa is sort of one of his famous success stories, you know, plucked from Japanese football. I think it's a progressive move and a really exciting one. I'm fascinated to know what Arsene Wenger's role in this is. You know, is this an appointment that sort of looks beyond Arsene Wenger? Is it something that he has ratified or sort of done himself? It's difficult to unpick, isn't it, behind the scenes, exactly how this will have come about.
Yeah. I mean, look, from what I've heard as well, things behind the scenes in terms of the scouting department have been bad for a number of years now. I think they reached a bit of a low this summer as well. There were all kinds of issues. And it would be very fair to say that things have gone stale in that department. So, yeah, I'd be curious as well to know how much involvement Arsene Wenger has in this. You have to assume he's got a significant kind of an input on this, given that he seems to have an input on everything else that goes on at the club. But maybe there's been, some discussions where people are looking and saying, okay, right, which part of our backroom setup could be improved? Where do we really need to make changes? And perhaps there's been that agreement, you know, and Wenger says, okay, well, look, you know, let's work on the scouting. We've discussed the director of football executive kind of position as well before, which could happen. You know, the Barcelona guy, former Barcelona guy, is being linked very strongly with that kind of position. So it does speak to stuff going on in the background, and certainly scouting is an area at Arsenal that has long needed some improvement. You know, I think we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? When you look at this generation of French talent that's come through over the last number of years, Dembele, Mbappe, Lamar, I mean, countless players. Who are making the breakthrough into the French national team, and that would have been something we've been all over in the past. We would have had that knowledge, that expertise, and the ability to perhaps attract a couple of those players to us. But they've all pretty much flown under our radar until they've become established. That's the thing, and now they're big money signings, of course. So, you know, we've needed for quite some time to refresh things when it comes to our scouts. Steve Rowley is the current head of scouting. Whether this guy's arrival precipitates his departure, whether he'll go before that, it's hard to know. You know, there have been issues in the past, for example, where you know, we had a fitness coach, I think he's still there, Tony Colbert, who's still there, but he's sort of hung on while we've brought in the likes of Darren Burgess and what's the American guy? Shad Forsyth.
Shad.
Yeah.
Forsyth.
The Shadster. You know, and basically as replacements for him, but he's still there. He's still doing stuff at the club. So I'll be curious to see if we're going with a fresh broom or giving this a clean sweep. You know, this guy's going to come in and he's going to revamp the whole scouting department because, you know, we do have scouts and we have people in various countries, but whether he'll want to bring in his own people or new methods or what have you, it's going to be very interesting to see. But it does look like it's going to happen. I think it's a very, very positive move, forward-thinking move, progressive move, and something that the football club has needed to do for some time. So, you know, kudos for when it happens, because it looks like it is.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, to be honest, what it does to Arsenal's relationship with StatDNA as well, because apparently Mislintat himself is the co-founder of something called Matchmetrics, which is a German startup that claims to provide the most sophisticated big data analytics in professional football. It's sort of a similar model, really, to StatDNA. So whether or not that will be incorporated too as part of the package... I mean, he's been so prized in European football. There were a lot of stories about Bayern Munich trying to take him there. Probably some relief at Dortmund that he's come to the Premier League and to Arsenal rather than to Bayern. But one thing it does mean probably is that you can probably cross Thomas Tuchel off your list of future Arsenal managers.
Yeah.
Because there was a big falling out, wasn't there, between the two of them that led to Tuchel's departure. So
yeah.
There you go.
Oh, well, yeah. It's not like we're replete with candidates anyway, so...
Yeah.
So there you go. But yeah, no, look, a positive move and... You know, the sooner it happens, the better. There is the small matter of the transfer window in January that we might have to, you know, deal with a number of things in that sense. So we'll see as and when stuff happens. Yeah.
Right. Next question?
Yeah.
Well, there's a few around the substitution in the game. Let's start with this one. This is from John Brigden, who's at Briggy Smalls on Twitter. Great name. And he says, when Arsene took off Lacazette for Coquelin to make the team more solid, those around me at the Emirates booed and shouted, get out of our club, Wenger. What do you make of this sort of behaviour and what does it say about us as a club?
What does it say about us as a club? I don't know. I mean, it obviously speaks to great... disenchantment with the manager because you're winning.
It's not really about the substitution, is it?
No.
That's the thing.
No.
It's much deeper than that.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're 2-0 up in a North London derby. You're well on your way to winning the game. You're putting in a great performance and the manager is making a tactical, sensible, I think, substitution because the team needs that extra body in midfield at that point. It was around, what, 72 minutes? Something like that. The team needed... the introduction of a midfielder. I wonder, for example, if Arsene Wenger had brought on Jack Wilshere for Lacazette, would the reaction have been quite as vociferous? I wonder.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it would have been.
So.
I'm not sure it would have been. And it's not necessarily, again, I don't mean it to sound like it's, you know, it's anti-Coquelin in a way, because I don't think it was that either, really. Because if you stopped and thought about it, it's a sensible substitution to make at that point of the game. I think it speaks to the way a lot of people think about the manager, that they get that angry. I think as well the Lacazette not getting 90 minutes thing is becoming an issue for people. They want to see him play 90 minutes. Arsene Wenger doesn't play him for 90 minutes ever, just doesn't, hasn't done since the opening day of the season, and maybe the only reason why he played him was because we were behind and we needed goals, so he needed as many forwards on the pitch as he could possibly get. So I think it speaks just to about what people think of the manager, that even in the height of what was a very enjoyable day, and you could see that the game, you know, was going our way. We were playing really well. It was a good performance. We didn't look in any danger, that there's still room for booze. I don't know how we can deal with that or rationalize it. It just is what it is for so many people at this point.
That's it. That's the scale of the uphill battle the manager faces. You know, the positive result is this, and a positive performance, is there's still going to be doubters out there, and any kind of negative, you know, the same complaints will arise. I mean, if I'm honest, I sort of sit in that camp myself. You know, I do believe that Arsenal would benefit from a new manager, but I'm also realistic about that happening this season at any point. So I'm still able to kind of, there's enough kind of cognitive dissonance that allows me to enjoy these days despite my broader dissatisfaction, you know?
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, of course, of course. You know, but it just, you know, it's kind of disheartening, isn't it? You know, in the middle of a game like that against them, where
I was surprised by how vociferous that reaction was.
Yeah, me too.
I must say.
Me too. I mean, I could understand a few grumbles. Here and there, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I get that. You know, people want to see Lacazette play 90. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about getting the 3 points. It's about getting the result, about securing up the midfield. We did that. We still had chances to score. And maybe, you know, I don't suppose you can talk about Lacazette being more assured in possession when, you know, Alexis Sanchez is still on the pitch. You know, he's a bit wasteful at times as well. So, but you could see why, if he was going to withdraw somebody from that front three, it was going to be Lacazette. It's going to be the centre forward.
Very nearly kind of reap the benefits of that switch. We put Alexis up top and he nearly scored a couple of times, didn't he, in those last year. One time from a long ball from Francis Coquelin.
Right.
So it very nearly put the icing on the cake. But yeah, I mean, we had another question about the subs bench itself. This is from Tokyo Guna. They asked about Coquelin ahead of Jack, but then they said, were you surprised at the fact that Maitland-Niles was in the squad? Is there no future for Elneny and Theo?
Yeah, that was a surprise, wasn't it? I don't know whether there's been some...
I hadn't even noticed that Theo Walcott wasn't in the squad.
I noticed that because I thought he would be on the bench, particularly as he's a reasonably good scoring record against Tottenham at home and, you know, would have been an attacking option, you know, with Welbeck just back from injury. So I wonder, is there an injury or something to Walcott? So he got a little knock or a niggle. We'll see, I guess, in midweek when we go to play Cologne. But what does it say?
But the Elneny one as well. I guess maybe that's an injury problem as well. I was surprised. I suppose Maitland-Niles, what he has over Elneny is that capacity to fill in at wing back. Maybe that gave him an advantage.
Yeah, particularly with Kolasinac having that hip problem. So maybe that was part of the thinking there. You know, it could have been a very well thought out bench, but there could be injuries as well. So, yeah. I mean, Theo, has he played much in the Premier League this season? I don't think he has, really, has he?
No. I mean, I'm hogging all the questions now, but East Lower said, why is Walcott making no noises about not playing? It's his last shot at World Cup. Silence. Is something brewing there, i.e. January departure?
Maybe. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think he's just kind of accepted his role, which might seem like a curious thing to say, but I think he's kind of in Kieran Gibbs territory, right?
Yeah. I mean, Walcott he came on as a sub in the opening game against Leicester. He came on as a sub with 12 minutes to go against Stoke in the Premier League, and he came on with 19 minutes to go against Brighton. That was the 1st of October. So in total, Theo Walcott has had, I don't know, about 30, 40 minutes of Premier League football this season. That's it.
Wow.
And that's an interesting point from Jim, you know, about the World Cup. Maybe he's just accepted he's not getting picked for the World Cup anyway. He's had some bad luck there, hasn't he, once or twice in terms of injuries, but other times he was left out of the squad because he lost form. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe there's something going on behind the scenes. And I've said for quite a while now that I think if Theo Walcott was really serious about his career, he needs to go somewhere else. You know, if he wants to make the most of the final years of his career, because he's not a young man anymore, is he? He's, what, 28? You know, he's going to be 29 in March, and you're into the final few years of your career, particularly when you're a player like Walcott, whose key attribute is his pace. As you get older, that dwindles, obviously, and makes you a bit less effective. But I've said for a while that I think if he really wanted to play regular football, he's got to think about leaving Arsenal. And yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise if he were to leave in January, if we were to get a decent offer for him. I think we'd be wise to take it. and I think he'd be wise to go.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I guess a lot will depend on what else might happen in January, you know, in terms of if we're fielding offers for other players.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, I think it speaks volumes that I didn't even notice Theo Walcott. I guess because Danny Welbeck was back in the squad, you know, I didn't even notice Walcott's absence at the weekend. But it will be telling if he's involved on Thursday night, as you say.
Here's a question from Dale Gaynor, who's on Facebook. And he says, where does Mustafi's header rate amongst North London Derby headed goals? Given that it came from a free kick they whinged about and Mustafi could have been blown offside. Hashtag fuck off you Spurs. Good hashtag.
It's high up there. I mean, you know, I mentioned Bakary Sanya's earlier on in the podcast, and that's the one that always stands out for me. It was just so emphatic and actually kind of a whole game, not even a whole game, a whole season kind of hinged on that moment.
Yeah.
But there was something particularly delicious about the way Mustafi's header kind of floated in this far top corner. I was kind of sat quite nicely behind it, actually. It was one of those where as soon as it left his head, you thought, oh, you know what I mean? You're slightly off your seat.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy a dipping header, you know, from the kind of... it didn't have quite the same dip as the old David Platt versus United, but it wasn't, you know...
Different trajectory. You know, Mustafi's header was an in-swinger, wasn't it? And Platt's header was sort of like an out-swinger, kind of.
Yeah, that's true, actually, heading away from goal. I mean, Derby headers, I'm struggling to think.
Well, Mertesacker scored a great header like a few years ago. I think it was his first goal for Arsenal, where it was one of those, like Sanya, it was like a headbutt. He headbutted the ball into the goal. That was a good one. And there was a very famous one a couple of years back, of course, when Arsene Wenger introduced a certain Nicholas Bendtner as a substitute. He ran onto the pitch and ran into the box. I think Cesc Fabregas took the free kick or the corner. Bendtner rose highest and nodded home with his very first touch. So that was a great one. I'm sure there's loads more, but I've forgotten.
Yeah, I can't remember anyone. I remember Adebayor scoring one at White Hart Lane, a very good header one time.
Mm.
But yeah, the Bendtner one was great, I guess, just for the sort of instant impact. Nothing can top that Sanya one for me, though. That's got to be, you know, my favourite Derby header.
Mm.
You?
Yeah, I like, just because of what it meant. It was a real, it was a goal of, like, I'm not having this, not having it. We can't lose this game. It was just something about the aggression of it and the way that it changed the trajectory of that game. You know, we went on to win 5-2. You know, it just had that big of an impact on the team. I think the team just took something amazing. I remember he spoke about it afterwards. He said, I was standing there and I was thinking, we just can't lose to the enemy. We cannot lose to the enemy. And it was that kind of, you know, that weight behind that header as well makes it such a good one as well.
Let's have another question. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about these two after the derby. It's an inevitable question, really. At @GunaDS_DS on Twitter says, can the right contract offer still make Ozil and Alexis stay?
Yeah, it was interesting, Arsene Wenger talking about that after the game. You know, if someone said, look, will days like today make it easier to keep them? And he goes, look, been around long enough to know that it takes a bit more than just a good day against Tottenham or in a big game to hang on to them. But yeah, the quality, you talked about the quality of the contract. I don't know. I mean, I think Arsenal can and probably have offered these guys very, very good contracts. You know, they've got to be aware of what it's going to look like if both these players leave on a free as well. So maybe there's some, you know, really to-the-wire negotiating going on in terms of Ozil and Sanchez, but you know, it's hard to look beyond them leaving in the summer because we've got to this point. You know, we get to January and they could, they can start negotiating with clubs abroad. They can sign a pre-contract agreement, I think, with a club abroad. And I think they will have lots and lots of offers from big clubs in Europe because of the contract situations. Who wouldn't want Alexis Sanchez or Mesut Ozil on a free transfer? So I think it's got more to do with how successful Arsenal can be I think I really do. I know players often want to move around. I think Sanchez is the kind of player that, you know, does he did 3 years in Italy, 3 years in Barcelona, you know, 3 or 4 years with Arsenal. I think he might want to experience something else. But really, to me, it boils down to can we achieve what we want to achieve as footballers with Arsenal? Can we win the title? Can we win the Premier League? Can we win the Champions League? And obviously, at the moment, we can't win the Champions League. I think that's been the bigger issue with them not signing than anything financial or any benefits we might be able to afford them from that point of view.
I think we pretty much would have paid them whatever they wanted if we thought that we could get the deal done. You know, yeah. I think there was so much value for us in keeping them. I mean, so much value in keeping them that we've decided to potentially write off £100 million or so in transfer fees. So I think, I thought Arsene Wenger was unusually frank, I think, in his response at the weekend. I think normally he kind of trots out the line of, I believe they want to stay.
Yeah.
They
love the club.
Stay.
Yeah.
I mean, there were elements of that, but he also, he was asked, is this enough to keep them there? And effectively he said no.
Yeah.
But I did think that, you know, I mean, there's been an enormous amount of praise for Mesut Ozil after the weekend. And Alexis Sanchez, you know, I saw him taking absolute pelters from people in the first half, and then he goes and scores the goal. I mean, that's Alexis for you. But I thought it was an encouraging performance in terms of their commitment, right? Like, I think, you know, you couldn't question, they were as much part of that that pressing and that sort of will to win that was evident throughout the team as anybody else. I suppose, by the same token, that kind of doesn't necessarily prove anything. They're just being professional and part of a good team on the day. It doesn't tell you, oh, well, they must be desperate to stay. You know, it's a much more nuanced situation than that. And I still think they'll both be gone come next season.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be an ongoing saga. Right, we're almost at the end, but I just wanted to make another quick point about what we were talking about at the start and the reaction of some journalists and some media and also fans to Cup of Tea Gate and just the way that the clubs are covered these days. You know, I think there's been a big change, obviously, and I don't just talk about Arsblog here. I talk about, you know, all the other Arsenal websites that are out there and Arsenal podcasts, and the amount of information available to us as fans now is immense. We know, you know, we're talking about the head of scouting, we're talking about fitness people, we know everything. Fans who are committed to knowing everything about their football club know everything, because they can read about the backroom stuff. They can read about the youth teams. You know, George Bird does an amazing website about the Arsenal youth team. So everybody knows everything about everything these days. And we watch all our games, the 90 minutes of them. I think what's happened is there's been a slight or a big shift in terms of how journalists and football journalists are perceived these days, because they can't have the same amount of expertise about every club the way that the fans do. So whether you support Arsenal or Liverpool or United or Tottenham or whatever, you can get all the information about your club. You can watch the 90 minutes of every single game. And from there, you're informed and you make those decisions or you make your opinions, right? Whereas a journalist who has got to cover all the teams in the Premier League, or at least the top teams, he can't possibly know all that there is to know or all that the fans know. So they come across as being, I don't want to say wrong, but perhaps not as informed as they should be. And I think that then plays into the way people talk to certain journalists online, as if they don't know anything, which is not the case. They just don't know as much. And I think that that dynamic is really interesting. It's been a sea change because of the way that club-specific media now exists that never really existed before, beyond fanzines, for example. But now you know, there's nothing you can't find out about your football club.
No, that's a very good point. And I think as football's become more available to watch, you know, that shifted. It used to be that football journalists had so much greater access, and they still do in some respects, I imagine, you know, in terms of contacts and actually speaking to people within the game, much more so than the average fan. They will have a greater depth of knowledge behind the scenes. But in terms of, you know, interpretation of the game itself, you know, your ordinary supporter's got as much ability or capacity to do that in terms of access as any journalist. And I think that has shifted the dynamic. And obviously, sites like your own, you mentioned George Bird, that there is now independent club-specific media where people can be satiated who are obsessive about one club, you know. And these people who do it professionally have to cover, well, more than 20, you know. They often work beyond the Premier League. So it is a bit of a different ballgame, if you pardon the pun. But and I think that it's probably worth saying that although as fans we might perceive that these people are less informed than we might like, that does not warrant abuse.
No,
right?
No, of course. I'm just saying that it is kind of the way it is now. And I think I think there's, you know, we can certainly be aware of it. I think maybe as well there needs to be an awareness from certain sections of the media that this is, just because you're writing for X newspaper or whatever, doesn't make you more informed than the average fan, because the average fan these days has so much available to them and can engage. And, you know, on every level, if you look at, you know, the stuff that's available to us in terms of data, in terms of statistics, in terms of all those things that used to be the sole preserve of the big media organizations or the newspapers or the TV companies, broadcasters, what have you, you know, it's all available to the common man, if you like. And I think coverage of football needs to reflect that in a way, or certainly the way some people engage with fans, if they choose to engage with fans at all. You know, you've got to respect that fans have got this knowledge and got this information. Opinions, of course, are different. People's opinions are always going to be divisive, but it's worth bearing all that in mind, I think.
But I think as well, there's probably a difference in the way that we digest it. Well, there definitely is. So let's say there's a certain journalist and he writes about, I don't know, all the Premier League teams. Mm. We're not buying that newspaper in print in likelihood every day, so we're not seeing the breadth of his work. We're probably only clicking his Arsenal-related work and making judgments about his capacity as a journalist based purely on those few pieces.
Sure.
So I think that's an interesting thing as well, isn't it? It's like we engage with what we want to engage with as fans, but there's probably more to some of these people than we necessarily anticipate. I think it is a question of a bit of understanding on both sides.
Yeah.
And what is obviously a shame about this whole cup of tea situation is that it has boiled over. But I do think it is worth stressing that, as completely unacceptable as that is, it is a small minority, and most people are capable of being very reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can be sarcastic and you can take the piss and you can, you know, you can have a little pop here and there, but you don't have to be abusive about it as well. I like this question just come in from Andrew Reese at Andrew J. Reese. He says, what's your combined Daily Mail and Sun starting 11? definitely not any of the Custis brothers anyway, that's for sure. Okay. One final one, very quickly. Darren, who's at DazClark89, says, would you rather wear wet socks for the rest of your life or only be able to wash what's left of your hair once a year?
Only wash my hair once a year, because isn't there some mad thing where if you don't wash it for long enough, it starts self-cleaning or something magically?
Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I have heard. I've heard people say that. I'm not sure how true it is. You know, the natural oils that
people smell, as a rule.
Yeah.
They really smell, those people. Yeah. But wet socks, can't be doing with it. I think your feet would sort of start to rot slowly, wouldn't they?
I think so. Yeah, you'd just get sponge foot or trench foot or something like that. Yeah, that would be...
Sponge foot,
it'd be grim. Really grim. Yeah, for me, the hair thing, because you could just shave your hair off.
Well, exactly. I mean, I might as well. It's not a lot of hair. How much dirt can be trapped in this much hair?
Yeah, it's true. I did notice that your hair, you seem to be growing it out a bit. Is this deliberate, or are you just too lazy?
Yeah, growing it out. No, it's a little bit born of laziness, but I am also just sort of... It's an experiment. It's an experiment to see what sort of condition it is. You know, when you keep it really short, you don't really know what you've got. So I'm having a look, see what I've got,
right,
and then I'll
see what can be done with it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm you know, you do not, you, as Arsene Wenger would say, you do not want to limit the potential of your hair.
And do you think you're going to go into like a barber's, like they do in a, you know, a video game, or when you're setting up your player in FIFA and you can just choose through all the various different hairstyles?
I think, yeah, within a couple of weeks, I'll just be able to be like, I'll have a mohawk, please, or whatever it is. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. Very excited.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing the outcome of this barbershop endeavor of yours. Well, look, we better leave it there. Thank you very much to everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. Keep enjoying the 2-0 win over Tottenham, because, you know, why the hell not? We've got Cologne on Thursday, so I don't know what'll happen with the podcast. We'll probably do something on Thursday evening, get something out Friday morning. We'll have that for you on Friday. James and I will be here next week to talk about Burnley and all the rest. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.